Vedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Tantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Bol Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Agarishti Assembled Devotees. Agarishti Assembled Devotees. Agarishti Assembled Devotees. Agarishti Shri Shri Guru Gaurangha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text Number 27. Word meanings, Tokena, by a child, Jiva Haranam, killing a living being, yet one which, Luki Kaya, assumed the giant body of a demon, Trimasikasya, of one who is only 3 months old, Cha also, pada, by the leg, shakata apavritta, turned over the cart, yet one who, ringata, while crawling, antaragatena, being overtaken, divi, high in the sky, sprisho, touching, va, either, unmulanam, uprooting, to but itarata, anyone else than Arjunayo of the two Arjuna trees, nabhavyam was not possible. Let's see. This is Brahma's, Lord Brahma's, he has his favorite meter, the Brahma Samhita meter. Tokena jiva haranam yadulukikayas.
Tokena jiva haranam yadulukikayas.
Trimasikasya cha pada shakato pravritta.
Trimasikasya cha pada shakato pravritta.
Yad ringatantaragatena divi sprishorva. Unmulanam tvat tiratarjunayo nabhavyam.
Unmulanam tiratarjunayo
Tokena jiva haranam yarulukikayas.
Tokena jiva haranam yarulukikayas.
Trimasikasya cha pada shakato pravritta. Yad ringatantaragatena devi sprishorva. Unmulanam tutiratarjunayor nabhavyam. Jivaharanam Yadulukikaya. Tamasikasya cha padasa kato pravritta. Yadringatantara gatena divishvishurva. Translation. There is no doubt about Lord Krishna's being the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, how is it possible for him to kill a giant demon like Putana when he was just on the lap of his mother, to overturn a cart with his leg when he was only 3 months old, to uproot a pair of Arjuna trees so high that they touched the sky when he was only crawling? All these activities are impossible for anyone other than the Lord himself. Srila Prabhupada's purport. One cannot manufacture a god by one's mental speculation or by numerical votes, as has become a practice for the less intelligent class of men. God is God eternally, and an ordinary living entity is eternally a part and parcel of God. God is one without a second, and the ordinary living entities are many without number. All such living entities are maintained by God himself, and that is the verdict of the Vedic literatures. When Krishna was on the lap of his mother, the demon Putana appeared before his mother and prayed to nurture the child in her lap. Mother Yashoda agreed, and the child was transferred onto the lap of Putana, who was in the garb of a respectable lady. Putana wanted to kill the child by smearing poison on the nipple of her breast. But when everything was complete, the Lord sucked her breast along with the very air of life, and the demon's gigantic body, said to be as long as 6 miles, fell down. But Lord Krishna did not need to expand himself to the length of the she-demon Putana, although he was quite competent to extend himself more than 6 miles long. In his Vamana incarnation, he posed himself as a dwarf Brahmana, but when he took possession of his land, promised by Bali Maharaj, he expanded his footstep to the top of the universe, extending over thousands and millions of miles. So it was not very difficult for Krishna to perform a miracle by extending his bodily feature. But he had no desire to do it because of his deep filial love for his mother, Yashoda. If Yashoda had seen Krishna in her lap extending 6 miles to cope with the she-demon, then the natural filial love of Yashoda would have been hurt, because in that way Yashoda would have come to know that her so-called son, Krishna, was God himself. And with the knowledge of the godhood of Krishna, Yashodamayi could have lost the temper of her love for Krishna as a natural mother. But as far as Lord Krishna is concerned, he is God always, either as a child on the lap of his mother or as the coverer of the universe, Vamanadeva. He does not require to become God by undergoing severe penances, although some men think of becoming God in that way. By undergoing severe austerities and penances, one cannot become one or equal with God, but one can attain most of the godly qualities. A living being can attain godly qualities to a large extent, but he cannot become God. Whereas Krishna, without undergoing any type of penance, is God always, either in the lap of his mother, or growing up, or at any stage of growth. So at the age of only 3 months, he killed the Shataasura, who had remained hidden behind a cart in the house of Yashodamayi. And when he was crawling and was disturbing his mother from doing household affairs, the mother tied him with a grinding pestle. You notice this is supposed to be mortar, but it probably has it as pestle here. Pestle is the stick thing that you use on the mortar. Somehow it was never corrected. I guess it probably never will be. But the naughty child dragged the pestle up to the pair of very high Arjuna trees in the yard of Yashodamayi, and when the pestle was stuck between the pair of trees, they fell down with a horrible sound. When Yashodamayi came to see the happenings, she thought that her child had been saved from the falling trees by the mercy of the Lord, without knowing that the Lord himself, crawling in her yard, had wreaked the havoc. That is the way of reciprocation of love affairs between the Lord and his devotees. Yashodamayi wanted to have the Lord as her child, and the Lord played exactly like a child in her lap, but at the same time played the part of the Almighty Lord whenever it was so required. The beauty of such pastimes was that the Lord fulfilled everyone's desire. In the case of felling the gigantic Arjuna trees, the Lord's mission was to deliver the two sons of Kuvera, who were condemned to become trees by the curse of Narada, as well as to play like a crawling child in the yard of Yashoda, who took transcendental pleasure in seeing such activities of the Lord in the very yard of her home. The Lord in any condition is Lord of the universe, and he can act as such in any form, gigantic or small, as he likes. The Prabhupada ki jai. Om jnana timirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. In the course of going through the avatars, incarnations, Lord Brahma has come to Krishna, so even though he usually, with the other ones, he spent a verse or two, maybe, now he's going to spend several verses talking about Lord Krishna, summarizing his pastimes. So here we're hearing the first three in Krishna's life. I want to start by reading something about the last one that's mentioned here. The of course, this is part of the Damodara Leela. When Nalakuvera and Manigriva, they became trees by the curse slash blessing of Narada Muni. So after Krishna was bound to the grinding mortar, he pulled it between two trees and pulled them down. As a kind of an epilogue to this pastime, Krishna was, of course, there were boys that were watching Krishna. So because people heard this huge sound, they didn't know it was a thunderbolt that hit nearby or what had happened. It was so loud. So people came running there to find out what had gone on. And the boys said it was Krishna did it. He pulled the mortar between the trees and pulled it down. They just said, oh, these are just kids. What do they know? So finally, Ananda Maharaj came. And Yashoda, at this whole episode, she heard what had happened. And she was actually very embarrassed because what she had done to Krishna. She was feeling remorseful that she had bound up Krishna like that. So I'm going to read, this is from the Gopal Champu. It says, filled with embarrassment and sorrow, Nanda's wife Yashoda did not go out of the house. Neither did she talk to any of the ladies that came there. So then, smiling, Raja's King Nanda asked his son, dear one, will you go now to your mother? Krishna replied, no, but I will go to you. The wives of Maharaj Nanda's elder brothers, Maharaj, in other words, Krishna's uncle, the wives of Krishna's aunts, then asked small Krishna, whose breast milk will you drink? Krishna replied, I will drink warm cow's milk mixed with sugar. All the ladies then asked, whom will you play with? Krishna replied, I will play with father, and I will stay in my brother's company. Vraja's King Nanda then said, why will you not go to your brother's mother? In other words, Rohini. With tears of anger, Krishna replied, she abandoned me and went away. Hearing these words, weeping Rohini softly said, son, why are you so hard and cruel? You bring your mother great suffering. Then Krishna's not hearing these words. Gazed, tears in his eyes, at his father's face. With a gesture, Rohini signaled Balaram to bring Krishna to her. Balaram took Krishna by the hand. Freeing himself from Balaram's hand, Krishna at once sat in his father's lap. With both his arms encircled his father's neck. He showered a great rain of tears. Seeing his father gaze on him, Krishna was overcome with affection. Seeing that in his heart Krishna still loved his mother, Maharaj Nanda, to bring that love into open view, suddenly raised his hand and said, son, if you give the word, I will ferociously beat your mother. Unable to tolerate that, Krishna suddenly grabbed his father's hand to stop him. Again smiling and thinking of how Mother Yashoda has a kind and affectionate heart, Maharaj Nanda said, If something were to happen to your mother, what would you do then? Using these words to hint at Mother Yashoda's death, Maharaj Nanda spoke lightly of Krishna's anger. Tear-filled Krishna, manifesting the nature of a small boy, thirsted to be with his mother. Suddenly he announced, where is my mother? I must go to her. Shyly he approached Rohini and sat in her lap. Then as everyone there softly chuckled, delighted Rohini took Krishna into the house. There Krishna embraced his mother's neck. As a cow touches her calf, Mother Yashoda touched her son's head and chin. As a cow makes a soft sound, so did she. Her heart melting with a mother's love, she wept, and she made everyone else weep also. Made peaceful by the other lady's words of reassurance, beautiful-faced Yashoda pleased her handsome-faced son with the milk of her breast, Balaram at his side, and surrounded by well-wishing ladies, small Krishna drank the milk of Yashoda's breast. Remaining secluded, Mother Yashoda had not seen King Nanda for 3 days. On the next day, on his father's command, the Gopa Krishna grasped the edge of his mother's garment and led her to Maharaj Nanda. From that day on, the ladies of Braj jokingly called Krishna by the name Damodar. They affirmed, dark Krishna enchants every heart. So that's Jiva Goswami. That Damodar Lila, he was, I think, 3 years old. In fact, I was going to go into some of this. How old Krishna was. These different things, because this verse actually brings up some of the ages. He was on the lap of his mother for the putana, pastime killing of putana. He was 3 months old with Shakatasura, and he was, I think, 1 year old, right? For Let me see. I have some of this written down. So Putana, pastime, he was an infant. Shukatas were 3 months old. Trinavarta, he was 1 year old. Now this all took place in Gokul, or Mahavan. That's where, of course, where Krishna went first. Vasudev brought him, that's where they were living. So, also around this time, this was in Gokul also, he showed the universal form to his mother. That happened twice, actually. One time he was just sitting on her lap and she showed it, and the second time was when he was accused of eating dirt and she looked into his mouth. The name-giving ceremony occurred during that time. And Damodar Lila took place when he was 2 years and 2 months old. Some devotees have researched these. In some of the verses, even in the Bhagavatam, but also in other places, it's explained, you know, how old Krishna was at different times. So they moved to Vrindavan when Krishna was just between 2 and 3 years old. Vrindavan here means what is now called Chatikar, outside the town of Vrindavan. And they actually, it seems like they stayed there until Krishna was 6 or 7 years old. So they spent 3 or 4 years there in that area. It's where Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg meets the highway that goes between Agra and Delhi. Chatikar, it's called. So they spent several years there. We hear about how they, when they went there, they just put their wagons in a circle, semicircle, and then they put like thorny bushes and other things to make another barrier. And the wagons were covered too, which is kind of interesting. It's like the old West with the covered wagons. So they had like little covered wagons and they set them up there. And apparently it seems like they didn't have any, permanent residence at that time. They didn't build anything. They just stayed there for several years. So then they moved to Nandagram when Krishna was 6 or 7 years old. Let's see here. Let me read some of these things I have here. So we'll go back to the... I got all these notes. I'm going to get them all mixed up. The Putana pastime, there are some interesting things that are said about her. There's a commentary of the 10th canto by something like 6 or 7 commentators in our parampara and others also outside of our direct line. And that's been translated, called Symphony of Commentaries by a student of Gopi Puranadhan Prabhu. And so there are a lot of interesting little tidbits here and there. And sometimes the commentators... One thing I noticed about reading the commentaries of the Acharyas is mostly what they do is they just talk about the verse, really, and they take it apart. A lot of times the Sanskrit, they'll say, this particular word implies such and such, and they will say something. Or they might say, in Hari Vansha or in the Brahma Bhavarta Purana, this additional information is there. And they don't do any preaching, really. And I was thinking, Prabhupada does a lot of preaching in his purports. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also did that. But our commentators, generally, they don't really exactly do that. They just explain. Mostly they do a lot of explaining of the Sanskrit. You know, they're not necessarily translating it exactly because it's in Sanskrit and they're writing in Sanskrit. So they're explaining, you know, the meanings of the words. And sometimes it's not so easy to understand. So here's a few things I picked up from the Putana pastime. Because a lot of times I wrote down some of who specifically said this, but sometimes I didn't write it down. So one of the commentators said, because Putana, her expertise was killing children. So that, of course, is a particularly heinous thing. I mean, they're murderers, but murderer of a child, that's really, really bad. And she's called a Kechari witch. Ke means the sky, and Chari means to move. So she was able to move through the sky. I was singing, we had this word, this line in the song that we sing, Jayarana Madhava, Yamuna Tira Vana Chari. So Krishna moves on the bank of the Yamuna River, and Putana moves through the sky to kill children. But one of the acharyas says she was killing the children of persons who have the nature of demons. and who are somehow or other devoid of a connection with the Lord. And either this commentator or another one explained that it would have been inauspicious if Putana were killing Krishna's devotee children, that can't happen. So she was actually killing demon children, or children of the demons. Let's see, Sanatana Goswami, he says, this happened on a Saturday. That gives me a lot of things to think about. I was thinking, how do we know what day of the week it is? You know? I think of these Seventh-day Adventists, they make such a big thing about Saturday, and I think, well, how do you know, who decided when Sunday was originally? So I think the same thing. Because it says, Sanatana Goswami says, this happened on a Saturday, since it is universally well known that Saturdays are inauspicious. Now, of course, Saturday means Saturn's day. Of course, every day of the week is connected with one of the planets, right? Sunday is Sunday, Monday is a moon's day, and so on. Each day is connected. And I also thought, well, where did that come from? And where is that order? Why is it that why are there 7 days in a week? Even that question, you know, where did all this come from? I have no idea how this all works. Anyway, even Sanatana Goswami is talking about Saturdays. And he's saying that they're inauspicious. And then he says, and by looking at the words of Sri Parashara and Sri Vaishampayana, the main narrators in Vishnu Purana and Harivamsa respectively, it was nighttime. So that was new information to me. Because you always think that she's coming into town and everyone's looking at her, she's so beautiful, and you think of the dark outside. But anyway. So he mentions these two other authoritative sources, the Vishnu Purana. The main speaker of the Vishnu Purana is Parashara Muni, and the main speaker of the Harivamsa. The Harivamsa is the supplement to the Mahabharata, and it's about, well, Harivamsa means Hari's family, Hari's lineage, or Krishna's lineage. So it's about Krishna, it focuses on Krishna. So the main speaker of that is Vaishampayana. Vaishampayana is one of the speakers of the Mahabharata. So then, I think this is also from, oh no, this is from the devotee who's translating this. He sometimes has some notes. So in one note he says, he quotes the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, where it says, O notorious one, having obtained a great mantra from Durvasa, you can go anywhere and are able to create any form. So Putana got this power from Durvasa Muni, according to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. Now, maybe it was from a previous life. It's not specified. And then I think this is also Vishwanath. He says, the poison was without, in other words, on her nipple, not within. Kamsa ordered Putana, Putana, go to Nanda's house in Gokul for some business. Smear your breasts with poison and quickly give them to the child. So that's also from Brahma Vaivarta Purana. So you know, of course, that our Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has given commentary on how all of these leelas, they represent the demons, especially they represent different faults that we have to overcome. So regarding Putana, well, actually, when he's talking about Putana, he also talks about Kamsa. And he says, this is related to that, that's why I'm saying this. He says, where am I here? Anyway, the idea is that Kamsa, what he wanted to kill children. When he found out that Krishna had been born, or his enemy had been born, then he decided to kill the children. So, but there's an interesting article written by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that appeared in the Harmonist, the English magazine, The Harmonist. And in that article, it's all about Putana. And there's just some points from that article related to this idea about the demons and how they represent different things. So here, in the context of talking about Putana, he also talks about Kamsa. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, because Kamsa sent Putana there to kill children. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says Kamsa represent, he's the chief materialist in the form of aggressive empiricism. Kamsa likes to suppress the truth before it has time to develop. He has innate dislike for anything spiritual. He is associated with like-minded people, including lexicographers, those who upload dictionary definitions of subject, those who uphold dictionary definitions of subjects that are transcendental to dictionaries. And he engages these lexicographers to put down Krishna consciousness at the earliest stage. As soon as the transcendental child is born, he falls into the hands of Putana, the pseudo-teacher of religion. So this is what Putana represents, a pseudo-guru, false guru, false teacher. The attempted success of Putana over the genuine spiritual teachers is aided by the efforts of organized religion, which is atheism in the guard of theism. So this is what, in this article, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta really gets on organized religion. I mean, he compares the organized religion to Putana or Kamsa trying to kill right from the beginning. It's like the child is innocent, and as soon as the child is born, organized religion comes in and baptizes the child and then twists his mind, basically. Keeps him away from transcendence. Keeps him in a material conception of religion. Even though the inherent within the child is the ability to attain transcendence. He says, organized religion is an attempt to force the people in general to follow certain religious principles without effecting any spiritual advancement in them. So is doomed to failure. So he's accusing them of just teaching them dogma without actually trying to elevate them to a transcendental position. So anyway, so that's a little something in that context of how these demons represent different faults. Now, I actually have a list somewhere here of these others and what faults they represent. If I can find it. Let's see. Let me just go on here. So I explained about the different ages. It says that Putana, she came from outer space, it says in the summary to the 10th canto, chapter 6. So she was flying around in outer space. Prabhupada writes in his chapter summary. Of course, she was very beautiful. We know that she was so beautiful. And here's, sometimes the commentators, they give different explanations of things. And in our Bhagavatam, in the way Prabhupada, I don't know if Prabhupada says this actually, maybe it's in the, yeah, I guess it would be in Prabhupada, because 10th canto, chapter 6. So it says that she was coming, and she looked like the goddess of fortune. She was so beautiful that everyone was thinking, this is the goddess of fortune. She's just so beautiful. She must be coming to see her pati. So usually that's translated, her pati is, she's Lakshmi, her pati, her husband is Narayan. So sometimes it's explained that, well, did she know that Krishna was Narayan? Or what? And so sometimes the commentators say, no, that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda in their household, they worshipped Lord Narayan. They had a Narayana deity. So people were thinking Lakshmi is coming to see the Narayana deity worshipped by Nanda and Yashoda. But I think maybe it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says, actually, the pati here doesn't mean Narayan, it means Krishna. She was actually coming to see Krishna. And not out of devotion, but she was coming there to see him. So they were speaking, right, it was Lakshmi coming to see her pati, but her pati is actually Krishna, not the Narayan deity. So there's, of course, this pastime of Putana. It's quoted by Uddhava when he's glorifying Krishna to Vidura at the beginning of the third canto. He speaks this famous verse, Aho bhakiyam stanakala kutam jigangsaya payarapyasadvi lebe gatim dhati uchitam tatonyam kimbadayalum sharanam brajema. Who should I take shelter besides Lord Krishna, who's so merciful that even though Putana came to kill him, murder him by poisoning her breast, he gave her the position of a nurse in the spiritual world. So who could be more merciful than that? So this verse is generally recited as one of those verses that Shukadeva Goswami heard that made him attracted to the Bhagavatam. You know, the disciples of Vyasadeva sent disciples out into the woods where Shukadeva had disappeared to. He told them, whenever you go in the woods, you recite shlokas. So this is one of the shlokas that attracted Shukadeva when he heard about this. That shloka is also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Mukunda goes to meet Pundarik Vidyanidhi and he sees him as an ordinary materialist with his hookah and everything. He's really out there, like a really rich sense gratifier materialist. But then, Mukunda brings Gadadhar Pandit there. So Mukunda recites this verse, and then, of course, Pundarik Vidyanidhi goes into ecstasy and falls off his high seat and all this. So that was what the verse that he recited. Now this is, I thought this was interesting. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, Aho Bhakti Yang Stanaka Alakutam, he says, this incident shows Krishna's quality of giving liberation and bhakti even to those who hate him. I was thinking, gee, we're trying to love him, and it's not so. We want to get it. Putana gets it, even though she came to kill him. It's one of these. Krishna's definitely inconceivable. Why would he give her? Of course, to me, it always raises the question, too, what about free will? We make such a big deal about free will. It seems like she didn't have any choice in the matter. She went to kill him, and next thing you know, she's a nurse in Vrindavan. Okay, Krishna can do what he wants. That's the other thing. He can break the rules, no problem. So the next, of course, this could take time if I speak a lot on this. But then the Shakatasura, let's see, it's mentioned something. Do I have it here? Yes. Anyway, the Brahmanda Purana explains how he was cursed. Where is that stated here? Anyway. He was cursed by somebody because he did something wrong, I forget, in his previous life. And then he was given the blessing also that he would be liberated by Krishna. And he was under that cart. Gopal Champu, again Jiva Goswami, he said, in this case the demon didn't change his form. Like Putana, she changed her form from a Rakshasi, horrible looking Rakshasi, into a beautiful woman. And other demons too, we hear about they change their forms. But the demon, he hid within the cart somehow. Prabhupada says he hid behind the cart. And what was happening, they were having a ceremony because Krishna had just turned over for the first time. So they celebrate that. And this was at 3 months. And so then there was a big festival. Yashoda says it was especially done by the ladies. So Yashoda was the hostess. And she was, you know, this festival is going on. She had to see to all the arrangements and she had to say hello to the guests and so on. So then she was carrying Krishna, but Krishna was getting sleepy. So she put him underneath this cart. And Jiva Goswami says it was as big as a house. So this huge cart, somehow it was stacked with utensils for the ceremony. So Krishna went to sleep there. And then he woke up and he wanted milk. But because Mother Yashoda was busy, she didn't hear him crying out for milk. So he became angry and he kicked his feet up in the air. And then it sent everything flying, just completely destroyed this huge cart. And again, when everyone arrived there to see what all the commotion, what happened, who destroyed this thing? So there are a bunch of boys there, young boys, 3, 4, 5 years old. So they asked, the boys were, this is mentioned in the Gopal Chambal, if I remember correctly. The boys did it kind of as a joke. They said, you tell them. So this boy had a stutter. So he was saying, Krishna was done. He was telling the story, and all the boys were laughing. And the adults, I just said, all these children, they're just such nonsense. We can't get anything out of them. They were having a good old time getting the stuttering boy to try to tell the story. So let's see here. What does Baladev Vidyabhushan? Oh, actually, after this, past, or after either this pastime or the, well, I think after Putana, the ladies perform these protecting Krishna by, you know, waving the end of a cow, and the Indadaldis mantras they recited, may Achyuta protect you here, and so on, all these mantras. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he says, this formula for protection makes one aware that these ladies have knowledge of all the scriptures. In other words, we sometimes think of the cowherd ladies and the gopis as not so knowledgeable as the scripture. And Prabhupada often refers to them, they're not great scholars, he would say. They're just simple cowherd folks. But Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, actually, they know the scriptures. He says, which is established in the very nature of a living being, swabhava siddha. So it's part of the swabhava, the perfected soul. So they're perfect beings, perfect devotees of the Lord. So they have this within. So they know the scriptures. And Baladev goes on, he says, that is not amazing because they are Krishna's eternal associates. Although they have knowledge that Krishna is God, the Brijbasis also know Krishna's sweetness. Sometimes this comes up, do the Brijbasis know? I always say, well, they know and they don't know. It's kind of like when they need to know, they know, and when they don't. For Krishna's pastimes, they don't know, or they forget, or it doesn't matter. That's another way to look at it. It doesn't matter to them. So Baladeva says, the Aishvarya Gyan is present, yet merged in motherly affection for him. They are fully enlightened. Oh, here's my list of who these demons represent. I'll stop in a minute. I have enough to go on for a while. But so Putana manifest again. Putana is the false guru. The cart demon, it represents the tendency to carry the cartload of bad habits accumulated in this life and previous lives. He also represents lethargy and dullness. So we have all these bad things, but we don't work on getting rid of them. That demon is there. Now, one thing it said, I think Bhaktivinoda, does he say this? That you, by reading, hearing these specific pastimes, that helps to get rid of that particular problem that you have. I've always wondered about this, because at the end of the Rasa Leela, it says that by reciting this, or hearing this Rasa Leela, you become free from lust. So when at the very end, when I read that, I thought, well, can you do that with any of Krishna's pastimes? Won't any, listening to any of Krishna's pastimes, get rid of your lust? But these alignments are made there. It seems like to encourage us that, now especially, of course, the Rasa Leela, because you're reading about sexual activities, romantic activities. So it says, you might think, whoa, how can I get purified listening to that? But because they're about Krishna, they're not about sex, actually, then you become purified of that. So even so these demons, they represent these things, you're reading about them, and the potency is there because of the nature of the Leela, as pointed out by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to get rid of these specific faults that they represent. So Nakula, the deliverance of Nakula and Manigriva, the twin Arjuna trees, they represent, these two, arrogant pride from puffed up aristocracy rooted in madness for wealth. So that's pretty obvious because we know what they were like. They weren't even ashamed to remain naked in front of Narada Muni. Let me just do a quick read through a couple of these little things here. It says, Sridhar Swami says, although falling, so Putana, the Prabhupada says 6 miles. It's actually six something. It's a Sanskrit word. But the Acharyas say that this Sanskrit word means, they translate it into another Sanskrit word, which they say means 2 miles. So they say it was actually 12 miles. She was 12 miles long and 6 miles wide. And they give the height too. I forget what the height was. But she, when Krishna was grabbed onto her with his mouth, she went flying out of the town. Now this was, of course, Krishna's arrangement. She was screaming, so she wouldn't kill anybody, because she's so huge, so she wouldn't kill any of the people there in Vrindavan, in Gokul. So she went out into the forest, actually, and she just crushed a bunch of trees. And it said that those trees were part of Kamsa's forest. So Kamsa has his gardens. He's the king, so he has land here and there. So this is one of Kamsa's forests. Conveniently, that's where she landed. But still, Sridhar Swami says, although falling, her body turned trees that were within 12 miles into powder. And Vishwanath says, the sense of api also. So this is, in other words, this is the kind of thing that the acharyas do. So there's the word api in the verse. And he says the implication of this is she killed living beings while she was dead too. So she was such a big demon that she didn't want to die, just die. She wanted to take a bunch of others, you know, even while she was dying. So she didn't kill any beings or human beings or animals. She just killed trees, but she did kill living beings. That's how wicked she was. So don't feel sorry for her that Krishna killed her. All right, I'll stop here. I'll mention two little things. Another reason that Krishna sent her out, forced her to go out of the village, was that he knew that there were some people who were living outside that wanted to come and visit her, visit him in the maternity room. But so many people, not everybody could go. So Krishna made it, gave them his darshan by going outside of the town. And we also hear that the cowherd men cut up Putana and they burned her body. You can imagine, 12 mile body, a lot of chopping. So the acharyas say, actually, the cowherd men didn't do that. This is for low class people. So like blacksmiths and leather workers, they're the ones who came with the axes and chopped her up and made a big bonfire. It smelled like a guru incense. So these are a few things, a little extra. I've been compiling here and there things I pick up of how old Krishna was at different times of his, different things that he did. It's quite interesting, actually. One way you can get some information is because Krishna is about the same age as Arjuna. So people have studied the Mahabharata really thoroughly, scholars, and they'll say, how old Yudhishthira is. Like, they're about a year apart, Yudhishthira and Bhima and Arjuna. So you can figure out how old Krishna was because Krishna and Arjuna are about the same age. So if it says, this took place in Arjuna's life, this happened, so you can think, oh, this is how old Krishna was at that time. One thing I found interesting was that Krishna was in... He went to Mathura when he was about 10 and so many months, when he killed Kamsa. And he stayed there until he was 28 years old. At least I don't tend to think that Krishna was in Mathura for a very long time. Then I started thinking, Jarasandha kept building up his armies and coming back, so it took him a while, right? Every time he had so many akshohinis of soldiers. So it probably took him a year to, build up another army and come back 18 times. So that explains maybe why Krishna hung around there so long. Then he went to Dwarka after that and spent the rest of his time on earth, 125 years. This is actually mentioned in the Bhagavatam that Krishna was on earth for 125 years. He was about 90 years old at the Battle of Kurukshetra. All right, I'll stop here.
Nidhan Nagaraj, thank you, Baba. Very nice class. You're mentioning about the days of the week. So Parashara Muni, who existed before, or was living before the Mahabharata war and before Lord Krishna, he actually wrote the Brihat Parashara Hora Shastra. So in there, the different days of the week are ruled by different deities. So the avatars are actually the sources of the days of the week. So like Sunday, of course, is ruled by the sun, which is the Surya Vamsa that Lord Ramachandra is in. And then Monday is the Chandra Vamsa, which is, of course, that's the moon. And that's Chandra Vamsa is Lord Krishna's line. Tuesday is Nrsimhadev, ruling over Mars. So in that way, there's different deities. And it says that one should worship, if one has a trouble with any of these planets, they should worship the deity, the incarnation, for that specific day.
I was just thinking that this Rupa Goswami, And in all the Lita Madhavara, Vidagdha Madhava, he talks about how Putana took Radharani, Srimati Radharani and Chandravali from...
Oh, yeah.
So this is a little bit... I was wondering how this... Krishna killed Putana. Radharani came after Krishna, I think so. How we can reconcile that? Do you have any...
No, answers? I don't know. I don't know.
I kind of remember reading a while ago, but something that Kamsa had sent Putana to kill all, or was it Putana or somebody else, to kill all the kids who were born within the 10 days. You also mentioned that Putana just killed all the demon kids. Is that what you had mentioned? That,
well, the context of it was, that was her occupation, so that's what she was, when she was killing children before that, she was already known for that, killing children. So the children, the way it comes across in that commentary is that the children that she killed before Kamsa sent her, she had already killed. They were children of demon.
Okay, so then were children killed like 10 days around at that time when Krishna was born?
It's not described. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's not brought out in the Bhagavatam, at least, whether any children were born, were killed at that time. I'm not sure.
Okay. For some reason, I'm thinking, I don't know where I heard, so I can't say, but that the children were killed, and therefore Krishna didn't really have equal playmates with him that were of the same age or something. Anyways, I can't say anything because I don't remember when I heard or if my memory is good.
Yeah, things do come up in these other shastras too. I know the Garga Samhita has things, which I find interesting that Jiva Goswami never quotes that book. I don't know why exactly. But he quotes Harivamsa and the different Puranas. I know devotees like that book. It has some different details of things. Like, it talks about who Putana was in her last life. She was daughter of Bali Maharaj. And the son of Bali Maharaj was Banasura. I had forgotten that. I read about just recently in the Krishna book. So they were brother and sister. Putana in the previous life, Banasura and Putana. Well, sometimes there's some history. She saw Vamanadeva. And she was attracted, and then she was, that's how she got the opportunity to serve Krishna. Okay.
That's okay. That's what I was going to ask you about, was that pastime that you just mentioned.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay. So we'll stop. Oh, Vegavatipu.
This is just a complete detail, but when you were reading in the purport and Prabhupada said the pestle, you said, oh, I guess it'll never be corrected. And I looked it up in the dictionary. The mortar is the flat part or the bowl-like part of the pestle. Wouldn't that be actually the part that he did pull if you think of the pictures?
No, the pestle is the stick-like thing. That's the pestle.
Right, but if you see him, what he pulled between the two trees.
No, it's called uluka. What is it? Uluko, right? That's a mortar. The Sanskrit word is mortar, for a mortar. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.